Scripture reading is from 1 Corinthians, the 3rd chapter, 5th through the 11th verse. What then is Apollos? What is Paul? Servants through whom you came to believe as the Lord assigned to each. I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth. The one who plants and the one who waters have a common purpose, and each will receive wages according to the labor of each. For we are God's servants, working together. You are God's field, God's building. According to the grace of God given to me, like a skilled master builder, I laid a foundation, and someone else is building on it. Each builder must choose with care how to build on it. For no one can lay any foundation other than the one that has been laid. That foundation is Jesus Christ. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading, hearing, and doing of his holy word.
Well, I know it's going to add a few moments to our service, but I would be in error if I did not acknowledge some thanks this morning. First, I want to thank you and the tremendous way you have already made me, my family, feel welcomed as you did a moment ago. We arrived July the 27th, and some of you went straight to our house to help us begin cleaning. And in preparation for our moving truck that arrived 2 days later. And I know some of you thought Houdini packed the truck because there was so much in it. At the absolute hottest part of the summer, and I fear you're going to call in those favors, and there's no way we could ever repay them. But I want to thank all of you for all that you have done. People provided meals for 2 weeks every night. And my girls are saying, Dad, how long can we milk this new pastor thing? This was working for us. I also want to thank our staff, as was done so appropriately by Jennifer a moment ago, Linda McCoy and her fine leadership, the pastors and all of the staff, and the hard work they've done this summer, and the way they've made me feel welcomed. And that is so, so important. I want to thank our bishop, Mike Coyner, and our district superintendent, Bert Kite, outstanding leaders in Methodism. And I could not feel more blessed than to have their welcome coming from North Carolina to the Indiana Conference. I also want to kind of put on show before you our leadership transition team and ask them if they would come up and join me again. I asked them to do this in the last service. We've got one more service, guys. You can't leave yet. So I want to do this one more time. But I want to thank them for the work that they did that is about 2 years in coming together. They've been at this for a very, very long time, and they became for me the first face of St. Luke's. Going back to phone conversations in March, leading to visits, eventually to decisions. There was a meeting we had in a room back there one day. And it was one of those come to Jesus meetings, and they were Jesus. But that's where it happened. Dick Lawsonheiser just had surgery, and I'm so glad he could be here today. Don't take this mild-mannered look for granted. He's like a sumo wrestler. In a very genteel way, I felt like he got my arm behind my back, and just the persuasion of his spirit, I felt God calling me to come. And your chairperson, Sarah Cobb, in this whole process, I understand there was this 1 week where she had to send her family away for vacation. She stayed home. And she watched for 8 to 10 hours a day, every day, sermons. That's no vacation. But this group has worked so hard. And on all of our behalf, I want to thank them. And I hope you'll join me in expressing gratitude for their great work. It's been 18 years since you've done this, since you've welcomed a new senior pastor to the pulpit, preaching for the first time. And I've been pondering, 18 years, how much has changed in our world in 18 years? I want to have some pictures put on the screen just to think about how rapid change has been for us in that period of time. Since October 1993, when Kent Millard preached his first sermon here. This first picture is kind of an idea of the technology change. This was the latest cell phone. This was the latest cell phone. What made it very unique is, first of all, it was wireless. It wasn't like one of those bag phones. You know, you had to plug into the cigarette lighter, you know, it had the cord between them. And it wasn't one of those big blocks like Michael Douglas carried around in the movie Wall Street. You could, if you were a woman, you could put this in your purse, you could put it in your pocket, and it could keep your calendar on the phone. Wow. That was latest technology. This next picture, latest craze. What are these? Beanie Babies. This was the latest craze in 1993. This next picture, we all recognize, Starbucks. In 1993, where was about the only place you could find a Starbucks? Seattle, but in the other parts of the country, airports. There was no freestanding Starbucks in 1993. How did we ever make it? I don't know. Next picture, cassettes and VHS tapes. VHS tapes were the only way you could rent movies in 1993. There was no such thing as DVDs. Cassette tapes. Almost no cars had CD players in them. Thinking about cars, you know what the average price of a new car was in 1993? $12,750. In 2011, it's almost $30,000. More than doubled. Here's another picture. Words that were not in our vocabulary in 1993. Google, Facebook, texting, blogging, Skyping, Twitter. We didn't even recognize those words, not like we use them today. And then here's a picture of our church in 1993. It was just Robertson Chapel, not this building. If you were sitting at this place right now in 1993, you were not in worship. You were outside listening to the traffic. This picture was taken from the location of the lodge. The youth building was not where it is. And then here's a picture of Kent Millard in 1993. Somebody told me he had hair then, but we have evidence to prove otherwise. And in 1993... I had been out of seminary just 6 years. And now 18 years later, I'm standing before you as your fifth senior pastor in your history. I feel today a little bit like Admiral James Stockdale in the 1992 vice presidential debate. You remember that name, Admiral Stockdale? Although he had lived a distinguished military career, few people had heard of him. He was Ross Perot's running mate. So do you remember the first debate? He got up for his opening comments and he asked two questions. What were they? Who am I? Why am I here? That's how I feel today. Who am I? This guy from North Carolina with a southern accent. And why should I be here as your new senior minister in one of the greatest churches in Methodism? I take some consolation in knowing that the Apostle Paul asked those same questions one time. The Apostle Paul said, "Who am I? What am I?" He asked it of the Corinthian church. He asked that question in response to some problems they were having. Most of the problems in the Corinthian church were just simply a result of people learning what it means to be in community. Diverse people, different people, learning how to get along. Most of the problems, Paul was fairly abrupt in his responses. If you're doing something that offends your neighbor, well, quit doing it. If you're sleeping in the wrong bed, get out of it. Don't offend your neighbor. Get along. Be in community. But then he comes to this problem about leadership. There were people who were talking about the leader through whom they came to faith as being more important. You see, there were some who came to faith through Peter. There were some who came to faith through a leader named Apollos, and then some came to faith through Paul. And they were dividing into camps. And they were starting to argue over which one was more important, more legitimate. And Paul changes his tone. He's not so abrupt. He's fairly delicate in his response because he knew that what was going on in this issue was more than human pettiness and selfishness. What was going on was something that is at the very heart of faith. You see, the people in the Corinthian church who came to faith through these leaders found something they could hold on to in a world that seemed as if it were in constant upheaval. They found something steady that gave them hope. They found something that could hold them together. And what they found was faith in Jesus Christ. It gave them something to hold on to in the midst of all their changes. My father-in-law, who is a retired bishop, says that one of the most influential sermons he heard as a teenager was by a young candidate for ministry. He preached about what faith in Jesus Christ is like, and he said this: Jesus is like the North Star. The North Star is always consistent. It holds its position in the sky. It never changes. You can orient life by it. He said Jesus is like that. Now, what you need to know about my father-in-law is he grew up in a funeral home in a small town in Kansas. He was very familiar with death, but when he was a teenager, he found himself going with his father regularly to the train station to load the body bags of soldiers sent home from the war for burial. Death was no longer about people who had lived full lives. Now it was about young men who had families, great futures in front of them. And for him, it felt like the world was falling apart. Nothing made sense. And he heard this message and he found something to hold on to. Something in the midst of the craziness that gave him a source of hope that held life together. That's what the people in Corinth found. Something that helped hold life together. And when we find that kind of hope through special people, we want to hold on to them, don't we? People who help us know the steadfastness of God, we want to hold tight to them. And that's when Paul said it. Paul said, "Who am I? What am I? I'm just a person God uses to speak to others. That's all I am. What's important is not Paul. What's important is the God you have discovered." He said it like this: Apollos planted a seed. I watered, but God gave the growth. It is God who is important. All I wanted to do is be somebody who builds on what other people who have come before me have done. That's what I want to do at St. Luke's. I want to build on what other people before me have done. I'm just Rob Fuquay. This guy who was born and raised in North Carolina, whose mother was an RN specialist at the county hospital, whose dad sold life insurance. I'm just a guy who wants to be used by God and available to God to help other people discover what is the truly lasting hope of life, in whom we can orient life around and find encouragement. You know, I've already discovered many, many blessings in coming to St. Luke's. And one of them has been the fact that I get to come in as a new senior minister in a church that is just about debt-free. Just about debt-free. Because your previous senior pastor spent the last months of his career with you working to eliminate debt. And by your faithful response and that kind of leadership, it's happened. Now, I would say that that is really unheard of, except for the fact that I know that Carver McGriff did the same thing for Kent when he came. And this church has the history and the tradition of leadership that wants to invest in something beyond themselves, into the future of this church, because of the cause for which this church stands and represents. I want to build on that. I brought something with me today. You might not realize it, but you've seen these before. These shoes belong to Kent Millard. He said he bought them because you don't have to lace them up, and whenever he went into the airport, all he had to do was slip them off and he could get through pretty easily, but he said they were so comfortable to preach in. So you have seen these shoes before. And I asked Ken if I could borrow them today because I just simply wanted to point out what's probably a very obvious fact. I can't wear them. I can't fit my feet into these shoes. And Kent would be the first to say, and I know he's watching right now, that the last thing St. Luke's needs is somebody who can wear his shoes. St. Luke's needs a leader who can be comfortable in his own shoes. So I do not want to wear Kent's shoes, but let me tell you what I do want to do. And that is walk the same path they have walked. Because Kent Millard is a follower of Jesus Christ. And I want to be that kind of follower too. I want to walk that kind of path in this church and in this community. Because there is a lot around us that's changing all the time. But there's something that must not change. It must not change. And that is the mission of St. Luke's, to be an open community of God's people that helps others to seek and to celebrate and to live and share God's love for all creation. It's kind of odd to preach a first sermon that is the end of a series. But this summer, you've been thinking about those words, and today, if you've been keeping up, is the share word. And that's very much my heart, to walk a path that helps our church to keep sharing God's love for everyone. Friday night a week ago, Kent took me and my wife Susan with him and his daughter Coretta to the Colts-Redskins preseason game. That was my first social outing with Kent. That's quite an experience. Did you realize Kent knows everybody? We could not walk 10 feet without him running into somebody he knows. And do you know what he did with every person? He would look at him and say, "Oh, you have to meet the new senior pastor of St. Luke's and his wife, Rob and Susan Fuquay." He did it with everyone. The person who took our ticket. The person who brought us food. the mayor of the city of Indianapolis, the owner of the Indianapolis Colts. He made them feel like it was their lucky day to meet me. I started to believe I am lucky to be me. I waited for Peyton Manning to jog up the steps. He's got time. But when you're around Kent, that's how you feel, isn't it? That's how he'd make you feel. He'd make you feel like you're somebody special. That you count, that you matter, that you're important. That's because that's how Jesus Christ makes us feel. When people get close to Jesus Christ, no matter what other people have said about them, no matter what they may think of themselves, they come to know they're important. And that they matter, and that they are loved. You think about how much has changed in our world in 18 years. Think ahead to 18 years from now. How different is our world going to be? I can't begin to imagine. But I know what needs to be the same. A church called St. Luke's. That cares enough about the love of God that we are going to share it with everyone, regardless of age or economic station in life or race or nationality or belief or sexual orientation or accent. Even Southerners need love. That must never change. And as long as I'm here, it won't. Amen.